her chin up, her face bathed in moonlight. All along the vines on her hands, peeking through her sheet of red hair, white blossoms began to bloom, as if opening up to the stars themselves. The petals nearly glowed, as if they were lit from within. Ivy slid her gaze toward Selena, toward the mouth Selena knew was hanging open.
Not all the side effects of my transformation were awful or deadly.
More flowers bloomed in her hair until a crown of them flowed over her brow.
It's beautiful,
Selena whispered. Ivy smiled, wide and warm.
Thank you.
She spoke with enough gratitude that Selena wondered when the last time was that someone had said such a thing. Selena's chest tightened at the thought. Shoving that tightness away, Selena cleared her throat and asked, So this ley line, where is it? Under the factory? I thought it would be more obvious. Ivy nodded, those flowers furling up and slipping back into her hair.
People have been drawn to ley lines throughout history, without even knowing why or what they were. There's no scientific reason for them, for how ancient people knew those lines were there. All we have to go on is that many of the world's monuments are built atop them, Stonehenge being one of the most famous. You can feel the energy in some of the lines, in the stones on them.
I can't feel anything. Ivy beckoned, striding toward the wood and steel warehouse amid the barren field. Selena marked every detail as they approached, the one-story building, the high-up windows that seemed mostly shattered, the sagging tin roof. The wooden slats that made up the siding had been cracked or ripped away in spots, the gravel drive leading to the building mostly overgrown with weeds and grass. No one had been here in a long, long while.
It might fall down on us, Ivy warned as they paused by the small antechamber that jutted out from the side of the building,
the glass window in the steel door caked with grime.
So don't go inside, but the line cuts through right about here.
She pointed to a spot in the grass beneath her feet, moonlight shining on shards of glass scattered among it.
You feel it?
Selena stood where Ivy indicated. Still nothing.
I think I'll just have to take your word for it.
She pointed to the car. No hill to try it on, it seems.
I know. I just wanted to get out of the city for a while.
I should have guessed as much. Selena chewed on her lip. So no one has ever harnessed the ley line's power, here or elsewhere? Ivy shook her head, red hair flowing like a silken river around her.
No. Why?
Selena followed a straight path through the grass and debris, walking the ley line. Have you ever heard of a Lazarus pit? A beat of silence. Selena looked over her shoulder at Ivy as the woman asked, vines slithering around her wrists as if curious too.
No, what is that?
Selena went back to tracing inside the line with her steps.
There are only a few dozen in the world. They're naturally occurring pools with regenerative powers, all atop ley lines. I've never heard of them.
Because their owners don't want you to.
And you were making fun of me for the hocus pocus earlier?
Selena shrugged.
Legend claims that a Lazarus pit can keep old age and sickness at bay, even bring you back from death. Hence their owners protecting them. And the name.
Selena nodded, pivoting on one foot, just as she'd done so many times on the balance beam at the Y, and traced the line back toward Ivy. Once used, though, the pit's powers are drained forever, so it's a one-time get-out-of-jail-free card.
How do you know about them, if they're so secret?
Selena paused her steps.
In the place where I was trained?
Ivy tensed at that, at the implication of that word, trained. She'd know from that word alone what Selena was, that she'd answered to deadlier powers than Falcone or the Joker.
They had a Lazarus pit in the catacombs. It was guarded day and night. I first heard about it from the other students, who claimed they heard instructors whispering about it.
Certainly never from Nissa or Talia. Ivy crossed her arms.
I'm not surprised the rich and powerful want to keep such a natural wonder and gift to themselves.
Selena studied the ground beneath her feet. Neither am I.
Ivy asked, if you knew about ley lines, why act like you didn't?
I didn't know much, just rumors. And you're the science nerd, she said. I wanted to see if you knew more.
Selena toed the dirt. Not a thrum of energy to be found, at least not through the thick soles of her boots.
And maybe I wanted to get out of the city for a night too. While Harley was off doing whatever it was that Harley did in her spare time.
Ivy smiled, a few of those flowers blooming again. You can just ask me to hang out the next time, you know.
Selena laughed. I realize that now.
Chapter 24. Luke had thanked his parents profusely for the gala and apologized for the broken glass afterward. Just a drunk reveler who forgot to go home, he'd told his mom. She'd given him a look that said she highly doubted it, but asked no questions. His dad didn't need to ask questions, however, when Luke had insisted his parents go to their chateau in Provence. His dad had only said he'd have the private jet fueled up and they'd be on it by midday. How his dad explained it to his mother, Luke still didn't know. But his father had hugged him tightly before Luke left the estate. He wondered if his dad was worried he'd never get to do so again, if he was remembering the phone call he'd gotten in the middle of the night when that IED landed Luke in a field hospital. A few hours later, his parents were gone, flying over the Atlantic. That had been 3 days ago, and since then, Luke had spent that time holed up over at Bruce's manor. Well, beneath Wayne Manor, technically. Reading through any and all files on the League. Tigress, deceased. He'd written that into the system himself, and then he'd combed through Bruce's archives, searching for any sign of Catwoman. Luke found nothing, not a whisper. She hadn't gone by Catwoman until she arrived here, and either she was young, enough to never have made a name for herself at the League, or she'd been kept secret by Nyssa and Talia as they waited to unleash her upon the world, until she'd unleashed herself instead. And whatever she was going to sell to Gotham City's underworld, he couldn't risk that happening. Gray as her morals might be, ready to kill a woman and then uttering a final rite for her the next, he had no doubt that she'd go through with her plan, jeopardizing Gotham City in the process. Or would she? He was still puzzling over it as he finally returned to his apartment that night. She'd warned him to protect Gotham City from the League, the good people here. It made no sense. And time was short. There was a GCPD event tomorrow night, honoring the police's service to this city. Every important cop, politician, and donor would be there. It was her ideal sort of target, the kind that packed a message. Luke had no intention of wasting this chance to grab her, stop this madness. He'd already warned Gordon to have extra security, armed guards, bomb-sniffing dogs, metal detectors, snipers on the roofs of adjoining buildings. Every angle had been considered. Back in his own apartment, Luke opened his fridge and frowned at the empty insides. Right, food. He had none. He'd been living on Alfred's mercy these past few days, the older man delivering him sandwiches and tea services and the odd slice of cake or stack of cookies. But Alfred's care went beyond that. The level of trust between Alfred and Bruce, that was a one-in-a-million type of bond, not easily found or built. Yet Bruce had paid a steep, steep cost for it, one that Luke couldn't imagine, one that still haunted Bruce, decades after his parents' murder. Luke shut the fridge, the click nearly drowning out the sound of the elevator's ding down the hall, which meant pathetic. He was really pathetic, he decided, as he rushed to the peephole in his door and watched Holly approach her apartment. She had shopping bags again, heavy ones. He hadn't seen her since the party at his parents' house, since their strange, tense conversation. But it was still normal. She was still relatively normal.
Not at all like that cool-voiced woman who made him grind his teeth, who took on assassins and walked away, whose face he hadn't even seen, but that quiet laugh of hers haunted him. Normal. He needed, wanted normal. Even if Holly herself had warned him that it was a cage, he didn't care. Luke flung open his door. Holly whirled, keys in the lock, eyes wide. He cringed. Perhaps he'd been too enthusiastic with the door opening, a little too eager. He leaned an arm against the doorframe.
Hey.
Smooth, really smooth. She flicked her eyes over him, body loosening as she opened her door and dumped her bags inside. They landed with a heavy thump.
Hey yourself.
Not the warmest greeting. It was probably Bruce level, if he was being honest.
How was shopping?
His mind was a vacant hole, and he scrambled for a question, any sort of sane thing to say to her. She flicked up her brows. Stimulating. Luke tapped a bare foot on the ground.
You eat yet?
A pause, a slight tensing of her shoulders.
No,
she said warily. He tried not to look too desperate as he asked,
Pizza?
Holly considered, glanced at her bags behind her, then toward him.
Give me 5 minutes to change.
Luke avoided the urge to sag with relief.
And order two this time,
she added with a hint of a smile. And even with Catwoman's low, sultry voice still purring in his head, the ghost of a real smile on Holly's mouth made everything vanish.
I can't move,
Luke groaned to Holly 40 minutes later, patting his aching stomach as they sat a conservative distance apart on the couch. The TV flickered atop the lit fireplace, his apartment cozier than he could remember in recent memory. Holly set her pedicured feet on the leather ottoman, stretching out.
I sense a food coma coming on.
Luke smiled at her, scrolling through the channel guide.
You want to watch a movie?
A casual, tossed-out-there question, one that might very well constitute a date if he'd asked it at another time and place. Holly paused again. He braced himself for the rejection, but she said, Sure. Luke eyed her.
You're being nice.
Would you prefer I not be?
No, I wasn't sure where we stood after my family's gala.
She opened her mouth to speak, but his phone buzzed on the couch between them, and her eyes dipped down. Bruce Wayne was displayed in big letters across the front of his phone. Christ. Luke gave her an apologetic wince and hurried into his bedroom, shutting the door. Luke picked up right before it went to voicemail.
Hey, man.
He could practically hear Bruce's frown through the phone.
Hey yourself.
Luke stepped into his walk-in closet, shutting the door there, too, just to be safe.
What's up?
Another pause, heavy and long.
What the hell is happening over there?
And there it was, the call he'd been waiting for these weeks.
I've got it under control. Doesn't look like it.
Luke gritted his teeth.
I don't answer to you. No, but you answer to the people of Gotham City. I've got it under control,
he repeated.
You call three women wreaking havoc on Gotham control? Poison Ivy, she's been mostly harmless, an environmental fanatic, but harmless.
Luke could have sworn he heard Bruce ticking the items off on his fingers.
Harley Quinn, not so harmless, but has been quiet since her ex-boyfriend went to Arkham. So the way I see it, this newcomer, Catwoman, whatever you call her, she's the ringleader. I know. She's the one you need to lock up,
Bruce went on. I know, Luke snapped. Another one of Bruce's pauses.
I should come back.
No, Luke growled. You should not. One, I've got it under control. Two, you've got your own mission to deal with. That Bruce still hadn't told Luke about. Luke felt just a tinge guilty. Just a tinge. Because aggravation aside, the idea of seeing Bruce go head-to-head with Catwoman, it made something in his stomach twist a bit. Just enough that he didn't want Bruce coming home anytime soon,
mission or no. Bruce sighed tightly.
Call if you need anything.
Luke debated reminding Bruce that he wasn't some underling, but only said,
Sure, man.
Bruce terminated the call without further farewell. Luke sighed, staring at the built-in oak shelves of his closet. No, he didn't answer to Bruce, never had and never would, but he did owe this city some semblance of safety. Taking a moment to gather himself, Luke loosed a long breath before heading back into the living room.
Sorry about that,
he said, setting the phone on the coffee table before sitting on the couch once more. Holly lifted a groomed brow.
Friend of yours?
He's my boss, so yeah.
I thought your father was the CEO.
He is, but it's the Wayne family's company.
And I suppose you and Bruce Wayne are card-carrying members of the Rich Kids Club.
And you're not?
She blinked at him. It's different for boys. He leaned back on the cushions.
Yeah, yeah. Says the girl who told me Europe was boring.
Holly rolled her eyes. A bit of posturing.
Why did you come here, then?
The amusement on her face died, went quiet, those green eyes again wary and distant. Luke pressed, wondering if he sounded like an idiot, as he asked, as casually as he could,
Bad breakup or something?
Holly swallowed.
You could say that. I wanted a fresh start.
He tucked his hands behind his head.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Was that a nice thing you just said to me?
Luke chuckled.
Smartass.
He pointed toward the TV with the remote.
Pick a movie. Any movie.
A challenge and dare. Her green eyes flickered with it.
All right. Carousel.
The musical?
You know it?
I saw the revival on Broadway a few years back.
He shrugged.
Carousel it is.
No, no, let's watch something you want.
Backing out of it now that I called your bluff?
Holly crossed her arms. Luke chuckled, switching over to his streaming service and finding the movie. But as the overture started, he could have sworn he saw her smiling. There was sand and blood and screaming. His body was on fire, shrapnel turning into claws that dug deep and shredded. Limbs rained, blood sprayed, and he could do nothing while they died and died around him, while the world turned over and his ears hollowed out, and he knew he was never going home, would never see his mom or dad, would never make it home. Luke, he was going to die here, in this place where he'd come to prove something to himself, his parents, the world. To prove he wasn't some spoiled brat, to fill some hole inside himself. Now he was full of countless holes, bleeding out. Luke! He couldn't stop it. The blood, the dying, couldn't move to help his friends, screaming in pain, or the one so still, not screaming at all. Luke! The shouting tugged at him, but it was the pain that slammed him home. His face stung, and he blinked. Blinked and gasped for air, trying to reconfigure where he was in the blue-lit dimness. You're in your apartment in Gotham City, said a steady female voice. You are alive. Luke shook, unable to halt the tremors, the mortification now burning up his face, or the nausea rising up in him. He ran, not for the bathroom, but for the balcony. Fresh air. He needed fresh air. He reached the door when two strong, slim hands grabbed his shirt, tugged him into a stop. Luke,
fresh air,
he got out. Those hands loosened their grip, but remained steady on him. One slid around his waist. Holly. Holly Vanderhees. She brought him to the railing, let him brace his arms against it, head hanging in the brisk wind, peering toward the drop below as he rallied himself, steadied himself.
You must have nodded off.
Right. After the movie had ended, he'd switched to regular cable news, and she'd stayed to watch, and he'd been so warm and comfortable.
What can I get you?
Her voice was a low, steady purr, and familiar, that tone, that calm.
I'm fine,
he said, his voice raw. He must have been screaming.
It's just the...
He sucked in another lungful, working through his breathing the way the therapist had taught him.
This happens since I came home.
She was so silent that he glanced toward her. He didn't find the pity he expected, or the fear, only surprise, something else he couldn't place. But it was gone with a few blinks. She brushed sweat from his brow with her bare fingers. She did it again on his other temple, then his cheek, the other one. Tears. She said quietly,
I understand. My mother was abusive.
The nightmares, the horror, eddied out of his head.
I'm sorry.
Her mother was dead, he reminded himself, if only so that he didn't contemplate hunting her down and putting her behind bars.
I still remember it, too. When she'd come home drunk or high, sometimes both. I still hear her rants. Still remember shaking in terror because I knew what was coming.
Abuse happened at every level of society, even the highest one. It made him sick to be reminded of this by hearing what Holly had gone through.
She broke my arm once, when I was 10. And it's such a stupid cliche, but I told the hospital that I fell while climbing a tree.
His stomach churned as he glanced at the arm she now touched, like she could still feel that broken bone.
Did your dad?
Her parents were both dead. Asking was dangerous territory, yet
he was never there. Didn't even know it happened.
He stared at her, and Holly did not look away.
I know what it's like, she said quietly, to have those nightmares.
Luke swallowed, his heartbeat at last calming, his breath evening out as he focused on Holly and her voice.
We both survived, he rasped. We both made it out.
Again, that flicker of emotion in her eyes that he could not place.
We did, she replied, her arm brushing against his,
that arm that had seen such pain, such ugliness. He studied their touching arms, the fingers that had so gently wiped the tears from his face. He hooked a finger under her chin, lifting her head to find her eyes upon him. Luke found himself not caring about who might be watching from the buildings around them, the street far below. He didn't really care about much at all as he leaned in and kissed her. Or tried to. Holly pulled away. His gut dropped and twisted, his face heating instantly as she recoiled, rejected him. Bad breakup, she'd said, and from the grimace he'd seen when they'd danced to that song the other night, she still wasn't over whoever had broken her heart.
I'm sorry, she blurted.
You don't need to apologize.
Her choice. It would always be her choice if she wished to kiss him or not.
It's fine.
Those green eyes darted over him.
I'm not what you need, Luke.
Don't assume you know what I need.
The words burst from him before he could restrain them. She backed away from the balcony, swallowing, color high on her cheeks. His voice was hoarse as he demanded,
Does it scare you?
This nightmare I can't control?
No. Never.
There was enough raw honesty in her voice that he was tempted to believe her. She still kept backing toward the balcony doors.
My life is complicated. You are a good man, Luke.
And the way she said it?
Are you in some sort of trouble?
He'd find a way to help her. Batwing could find some way.
My life is complicated, she repeated. It's unfair to make promises.
And before he could find out what that meant, she was gone. Luke was spoiling for a fight with some of Gotham City's worst. To do something to stop them. He knew that the moment he woke up the next day, when he donned his tux for the GCPD event that night, when he arrived and danced his way through the party, waiting for her, the one who could give him the fight he was looking for. He'd seen her with Tigress. He knew that he could throw everything he was at her, and she wouldn't break. Tonight, it ended. No more fooling around, no more letting her edge past him. If she and her two besties showed up tonight, they would find themselves leaving in handcuffs. Luke tried his best to focus on the job at hand and not to glance at Holly. Holly, beautiful in seafoam green, who kept looking like she'd approach him all night. Luke made a point not to get near enough to let her, to always have a dance partner. He knew he was being a jerk, what Elise would call immature man-baby bullshit, but he didn't care. He had bigger things to worry about than kissing his neighbor, or failing to. So Luke stood in the crowd, champagne in hand, while Gordon got up on the stage to make a toast. The time for Catwoman, Harley, and Ivy to strike would be now, when everyone was watching and the cameras were rolling. Yet Gordon, clad in a tux, his auburn hair slicked back for once, got through his speech about the ongoing efforts of the GCPD to build bonds with the people of this city, saluting the men and women in uniform who worked tirelessly to make it a safer place. Some of what he said was bullshit, but most of it was born out of Gordon's genuine hope and belief that the GCPD could rise above its past and current history and become something better. Gordon paused only once to glance down at his phone, and then he saluted the assembled cops. Luke followed the crowd in lifting a glass to the officers as well. Luke casually followed the men and women at his table, top city officials, toward where Gordon now stood to the left of the stage, speaking quietly to those gathered. No one noticed Luke standing off to the side as Gordon softly announced,
"When I tell you what I'm about to say, I want no signs of panic. You act normal."
Luke's blood began to pound. Gordon went on.
"The chemical factory in Otisburg was robbed an hour ago."
Catwoman wasn't going to come, Luke realized as Gordon spoke. She'd taken advantage of every top cop in the city, every resource being focused here instead. Focused here because
Poison Ivy was spotted driving off with a semi full of chemicals.
Shit. Shit. Gordon's throat bobbed. He said so quietly Luke had to lean in to hear it.
"And Harley Quinn just used her extensive knowledge of explosives to blow up another wall of Blackgate Penitentiary. She's freed key members of the Joker's gang. His numbers 2, 3, and 4.
Luke's blood went cold. Gordon said,
"We move now. Don't breathe a word. They need to be recaptured before the press knows."
Gordon's people began asking questions as Luke stalked toward the exit. Holly caught his eye as he passed, her brows rising high, as if she'd spotted Gordon's little conference, had seen him listening in. Luke gave her a cold, bored stare in exchange and prowled out. Fast. He had to act fast. Because if the Joker's top three guys were out of jail, then bad, bad things were about to happen. Chapter 25. Luke knew their names, their long, long list of crimes. Honestly, it might have felt like a joke, taking on three guys named Smiles, Bozo, and Chuckles, but these guys were far from well-meaning clowns. He soared over the East End, his suit providing readouts of the people below. None matched the known height, weight, and description of the Joker's top three men. His heart hammered in his chest, even as he tried to calm it. This rush, right before a fight, before launching himself into the fray. There had been some nights, when he first returned home, when this rush was the only feeling he'd had in days. It had made it easier back then to head out into Gotham City's shadows, to know this adrenaline pumping through him was waiting. He'd found balance since then. But even now, as his wings caught an updraft and he soared, yeah, he loved that rush. Loved how it expanded, as if it would fill the entire world, and then narrowed, focusing right as he saw them. Honing that rush directly on the three men who stalked down an alley, one with a baseball bat slung over a shoulder, one with what seemed to be a chain wrapped around his fist, and the other, what looked to be a long, wicked knife glinted in the dimness. They hadn't even bothered to ditch their jumpsuits. Luke banked, checking his speed. 3-1. Not bad odds, but these weren't ordinary men. There was a dark, wet stain on the back of the tall, slender one in the center, Bozo. Not his blood, the suit told Luke, but someone else's. The chain dangling from Bozo's hand had blood on it, too. Jesus. Chuckles's baseball bat, propped against his broad, meaty shoulder, those were nails sticking out of the tip. Big ones. Luke lowered himself, closer and closer to the opposite end of the alley. Ambushing from behind would work in his favor. It went against every bit of training in the ring, felt cowardly even against these men, but it was Smiles, slender, average height, and the Joker's number two, who held that large knife. Smiles hadn't become number two because of a pleasantness of personality. No, Luke knew that nickname came from Smiles while killing, Smiles while robbing, Smiles while doing whatever evil the Joker commands. It was Smiles who Luke had to look out for, and Smiles who made him dim his suit lights to darkness, land near silently on the alley floor, and free a batarang from his suit. He'd modified the simple metal design in his lab. This, at a signal from his suit, would inflict as much of an electric shock as a taser. One of his friends overseas had been a sniper. Luke had talked with her countless times about how she calculated distance and wind and light and movement. She'd never missed a shot. The three men reached the edge of the alley, still unaware of his presence behind them. Luke lined up his shot, then freed two more batarangs for his second and third, anticipating how the other two might scatter. His job wasn't to kill them. He'd seen enough of that overseas for a lifetime. Still disgusted in group therapy with the others. The victims of these men deserved justice, real justice through a court of law. Not vigilantism. And as screwed up and evil as these men were, they had some right to a trial, too. Luke fired the batarang at Smiles's wiry frame, but the Joker's second must have heard the buzz of the electric charge. Faster than Luke had expected, Smiles grabbed Bozo and whirled, the Joker's number four pressed against his chest, a human shield. The batarang hit Bozo right in the chest, stunning him. The chains jangled as they hit the concrete, Bozo following them, utterly unconscious. As Luke had anticipated, Chuckles whirled toward his companion rather than run for cover. Luke fired his second batarang right where he'd calculated. Chuckles and his baseball bat thudded on the ground. Smiles sized up the alley, his pale face gaunt and sneering.
"Come out, come out,"
he whispered, his voice high and reedy, a poor imitation of the Joker's natural, bone-chilling voice.
"No one likes a party pooper."
He beckoned with his long knife. It glinted, catching the light of the street lamp. 1-1. Much better odds. Luke stepped out of the shadows, letting the insignia on his chest flare brightly. Smiles grinned crookedly, dancing on his feet, an uneven, unbalanced move, something he'd seen plenty of people do when they thought they knew about boxing. It only served to make his center of balance unwieldy.
"Catch me if you can," Smiles whispered and sprinted away.
Let him run. Luke was already dialing the GCPD. He had learned early on that he risked losing two unconscious criminals if he didn't make sure they were secure before going after a third on the run. It was a matter of a few minutes to get Bozo and Chuckles tied to a lamppost, sirens sounding from a few blocks away. Good. With patrol cars swarming down the block, Luke leapt into the skies, scanning the streets below. It had been 5 minutes max. But a great deal could happen in 5 minutes in Gotham City. There were sewer entrances everywhere, the preferred route of many of the city's worst. There, sprinting toward the docks, that knife shining in the dark. Smart, yes, but untrained, unaware that the glint was a dead giveaway. Smiles turned a corner in the labyrinth of dockside warehouses, heading for the small marina. Luke banked right and landed in the shadows just north of his route. Only to discover that Smiles had found a way through the warehouses rather than around them,
As Luke landed, the alerts on his helmet flared and he ducked, falling back as Smiles slashed at him. Not fast enough. The knife dragged along his side, sundering metal plates and flesh. Luke swore, shutting out the pain, despite the warmth of blood filling his suit. On an unarmored person, that blow would have gutted them like a fish. Smiles smirked at the blade, the blood on it.
You know how much this DNA will sell for?
Luke's blood leaked from him, dangerously fast. He had to end it now.
Too bad you won't find out,
Luke said, and moved. His suit insignia flared, bright as the flash on a camera bulb, blinding Smiles, throwing him off balance. Luke barreled into him, slammed a palm into his elbow, forcing his fingers to splay and drop the knife, then blasted his fist into Smiles' face in a decimating right hook. Bone crushed and blood sprayed. Luke wasn't done yet. As Smiles reeled to the right, Luke swept his leg out, turning the criminal's already uneven balance against him. Smiles went crashing to the wooden planks, groaning. Luke was on him in an instant, his batarang firing right into his chest. Smiles slumped against the planks, nose leaking, unconscious. Luke didn't dare pause and let his adrenaline wear off, not with a wound leaking down his side, not with the pain barking through him at every movement. He managed to make another call to GCPD before he hurled Smiles' knife into the dark river, sending his own DNA washing away, hoisted the slim criminal over a shoulder, and carried him out of the docks. Here, any manner of lowlife might easily find him. Luke gritted his teeth with every step, but he made it. And when Smiles was chained to a post office box, whimpering into consciousness as cops began arriving on the scene, Luke managed to leap to a nearby rooftop. Gotham City had never seemed so large, endless. He'd have to make it home before he could risk pausing to catch his breath. He could barely focus enough to land and tuck in his wings and find her waiting for him. Catwoman let out a sultry laugh.
Did you wait for me at the gala tonight?
He had, and she'd made a fool of the GCPD on a night in their honor. Luke lunged for her, but his body chose right then and there to remind him that it had its limits, and they had been reached, and then some, tonight. His step forward turned into a sway back, 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 as darkness closed in. Clawed hands reached for him as the drop off the roof loomed. Luke barely remembered how they got there, how he didn't wind up shoved off that roof and splattered on the street below. Everything was veiled in a pain-filled fog. The slice to his ribs must have been deeper than he'd realized. He had the vague sense of being half-carried, of a slender body holding him upright, helping him down and over things, but he had no idea where he was when she led him into a small, yet clean apartment, dark and quiet. All he knew was that it wasn't his apartment. A shiver skittered down his spine. The bedroom she shut them in was also neat and tidy. Pretty, but not fancy. No sign of wealth in the aging paint, the chipped dresser. The mattress she plunked him on groaned softly beneath the weight of him in his suit. She'd given him something before they'd started walking, he remembered. A shot injected through the small sliver of skin between his neck and shoulder. Adrenaline, or a compound like it. It had steadied him enough to move. And now it seemed to be kicking in more, clarifying things. A small light clicked on, dusting Catwoman's black suit in its golden glow. She took a seat beside him and said,
"Either I can patch this up for you here, or I can take you to the hospital."
Luke managed a half smile.
"You offer me another option now?"
She didn't answer, instead opening a small pouch in her utility belt to remove what seemed to be bandages, a sterile needle, and thread, along with two vials of what had to be antiseptic and some local numbing agent.
"You know how to use that stuff?" "A skill I picked up at the League,"
she said, bending to examine the gash visible through his armor.
"Can you remove this?"
Luke hesitated. The helmet and the suit were separate, but taking off the suit required more movement than he could muster right now, and being prostrate before her, his brown skin exposed, well, it'd certainly narrow any potential list she had for who Batwing might truly be. There were plenty of black guys in Gotham City, but ones who might have access to tech like this? She didn't wait for him to decide. The drug she'd given him, or perhaps his blood loss, made him unable to react fast enough to block her as she flicked a steel claw free and carefully sliced away sections of bloodied metal, carving out a hole in his suit as easily as she'd sliced that circle in the glass display case at his family's estate. Luke watched, his head heavy, while she removed the overlapping metal scales, setting them on the bed.
"You'll have to take those with you, or else the DNA might be a problem," she advised. She was right. If someone analyzed it and matched it against the Marine's database, his cover would be completely blown.
Catwoman adjusted something in her helmet's lenses as she examined the wound.
"No signs of foreign objects inside," she said,
more to herself than to him.
"Your helmet can tell you that? Among other things."
He hissed as she dabbed the antiseptic onto the slice down his ribs, and just to keep himself from thinking about what she was going to do with that needle and thread, Luke asked,
"Where did you get that suit?"
She stabbed him with a syringe, numbing the area.
"I made it myself."
Perhaps she had a shred of pity for him, because she went on, as if to distract him from the stitches.
"I've always loved science and technology."
A rasp of laughter, muffled by that helmet.
"I won a state science competition when I was a kid. It probably put me on the league's radar long before I even knew they existed."
He tucked away those facts. State. She'd likely grown up in America. He opened his mouth, then shut it. Admitting his own passion for science would only let her gather facts of her own on him.
"That suit must have taken forever to make. The base model belonged to the League."
Her needle glinted as it rose and fell. Luke shut out the strange sensation of thread passing through numbed skin.
"I modified it to meet my specifications. Like the cat ears and claws."
Another rasp of laughter.
"Like those." "Why the cat stuff?"
"Why the bat stuff?" She had him there.
"It was part of a larger theme."
"Your colleague's theme, I assume." Luke avoided the urge to shrug, considering she currently had a needle in his skin.
"Really, though, why the cat motif?"
Another few passes of the needle, and she was done, tying off the stitches. Luke dared a look, and found a neat, precise line down his ribs. She leaned back, gathering up the needle and remaining thread in the plastic case they'd come in, along with the various needles and wipes. She handed them to him, and Luke blinked. Right, they were covered in his blood, his DNA. And yet, there she was, handing it over, dousing her own gloved hands in sanitizer once again, wiping away any trace of him from her.
"I had a stupid nickname at the League," she said at last. "So I took back the symbol for myself. Decided I liked it. The other assassins had their own personal touches, so I made this."
A wave of the hand to encompass her claws, her eared helmet,
to reflect my own. "It's impressive work. Did you make your suit?"
The answer to that might lead to too many questions and answers.
"Parts of it."
Not a lie, not entirely. Some of the tech had been made by others, like the robots in the lab. Her head angled, and Luke followed the line of her vision to his side, not on stitches she'd made, but the scars he realized were showing. The tail end of the big scar that sliced down his chest, ending right near the bottom of his ribs. He didn't move as she traced a claw over it, leaving his skin prickling in her wake. He waited for the question about it, building the lie on his tongue. One of the underworld cronies had given it to him, not that piece of shrapnel that tore through his body, his very existence. Instead, she asked,
"Who hurts you tonight?"
The question was icy, The coldness not directed at him, but at whoever was behind the wound, as if she'd hunt him down and hurt him for it. Luke was grateful for the mask covering his face as he blinked in surprise. He managed to say,
"You should know. You freed him."
She went still for a heartbeat.
"You caught him. I caught all of them."
Silence. She stood, stalking to the windows and shutting the curtains over the blinds, cutting off the streetlight. Then she opened up a drawer, fished out what seemed to be two sweaters, and shoved them in the crack between the door and the floor. She still managed to navigate the way back to the bed as if she'd mapped the entire room already. In the pitch black, he heard the hiss and click of her helmet coming off, heard the soft sigh of her hair being freed, felt the slight weight of the helmet as she set it on the mattress behind them. He waited, heart thundering in his chest. She said, voice low,
"Take off your helmet."
Luke couldn't help but obey. His side barked in pain at the movement, but he lifted his hands to either side of his head and pulled it off. Cool air kissed his skin. Both of them utterly blind here in the darkness.
"I should arrest you,"
he managed to say. "You should," she agreed, and he could have sworn he heard her smile. "But you won't."
"We shouldn't be doing this."
"We're not doing anything yet." It was the wry humor in her voice that had him facing her fully, had him lifting a hand to where he sensed her face would be and tracing her features. Soft, warm skin greeted him, and her hair, tied back from her face, straight, silken, thick. Luke ran a hand from her hair down the column of her neck, could have sworn her breathing became uneven. He brushed a finger over the line where her skin met her suit.
"Why did you bother saving me tonight?"
Metal and leather hissed as she removed her gloves. Slender hands found his hand resting on his thigh, turned his hand over, and brushed over the calluses on his palm.
"Because we're two sides of the same coin." "Really? You and I have a lot in common."
He couldn't stop tracing the line of her neck. His thumb found the hollow of her collarbone and settled, letting her pounding pulse hammer into his skin.
"You're trying to destabilize my city. I'm trying to save it."
Through the barrier of his suit, he could barely feel her hands making a path up his leg, up his stomach, his chest.
"Is there that much worth saving? You said there are good people here, that I should protect them."
"What about the corruption, the broken systems? Are they worth saving?"
"They are a part of this city, and people like that always benefit from chaos."
"Not permanent chaos," she said. "Just temporary."
"Just long enough for you to sell whatever you stole from Nyssa to the highest bidder?"
Again, he heard that smile in her voice. "Perhaps." He opened his mouth, but she asked, "Don't you ever get bored of fighting for the good side?"
"No. It was a part of who I am long before I ever put on this suit."
Her hands explored down his chest, to the scar down his torso. Luke shuddered as her fingertips whispered over the thick scar tissue. "Such a noble hero." She dragged a finger over that scar again.
"Why are you here?"
"Not in Gotham City, but in this room, with him." Her fingers paused, and as her breath fanned over his mouth, he realized how close they'd drifted, felt every inch of her thigh pressed against his, the warmth seeping from her. Not the cold-blooded creature of shadows that she appeared, but someone alive and burning.
"I cannot be here if you want."
She started to rise, and Luke's body barked in protest as he lunged for her, grabbing her arm and dragging her back to the bed. The suit beneath his hands was flexible, yet hard, some material he couldn't place, but the shape of her body beneath it?
"Don't,"
he said. "Don't what?" she purred.
"Don't leave me in the dark,"
he said quietly. She knew he didn't mean the request as simply what it was. "Don't leave me alone in the darkness, this place where we both exist,
yet serve different callings. Her fingers ghosted over his face, his nose, his mouth. As she made to pull her hand away, Luke gripped her fingers in his, interlacing their hands, and kissed her. The kiss was soft, yet left no room for questions, and Selena realized she might very well have lost her mind as she leaned into it, answering his kiss with her own. Warm. He was so warm. She could not remember the last time someone had held her. When she'd seen him on the roof, when he'd swayed and she'd spotted the blood leaking from his side, it had been blind instinct to save him, just as it was now blind instinct to slide her arms around his neck and press close. Here in the dark, in the silence, she let him, breathed him in. His tongue traced the seam of her lips in quiet request, and a small noise came out of Selena as he tasted her, gently, then deeply. His scar, that brutal scar slicing down his chest, she wanted to tell him that she knew, and that she also knew that they were as unlikely a pair as... He nipped at her bottom lip. Every thought eddied from her head. She didn't care about any of it, anything beyond this room and this man before her, and... No, that wasn't true, would never be true. He sensed the shift in her and pulled back, his lips hovering over hers.
You okay?
His breathing was a jagged, uneven rasp. Not yet. She couldn't afford to make mistakes yet. Selena leaned forward to kiss him, once, twice. His hands buried themselves in her hair, his body shuddering as he seemed to yield to that kiss, to her. She slid into his lap, his hands now grazing down her back, lower. He didn't react fast enough, didn't seem to realize that the click in the forearm of her suit meant all was not well. By the time the small needle punctured his neck, by the time he grunted in surprise, she'd leapt off him.
You,
he started, stopped. In the pure dark, she couldn't see, but she could hear as his breath left him in a rush and his powerful body fell back onto the mattress, unconscious. Selena scooped up her helmet, setting it on her head, but opting to keep the lenses away. It had been an unspoken promise of trust not to look. So she didn't, even as she opened the bedroom window and vanished into the night. Chapter 26. Harley's hideout in an abandoned underground subway station was precisely the sort of place Selena would have imagined for her. Chaotic, colorful, and stocked with various weapons. It seemed that the circus was the prevalent theme. Amid the various worn pieces of furniture were vibrant old posters of fire eaters and tightrope walkers, strands of lights strung up across the vaulted stone space, and what seemed to be an old red, yellow, and blue striped tent canvas had been converted into a curtain to conceal a tiny bathroom in the far back of the round chamber. Selena didn't even know what she was doing here. It was past 3, and they were likely asleep, but she needed to talk to someone, anyone. The thought of returning home to her apartment, to pacing across the immaculate floors for the remainder of the night, had been irritating enough that instead of heading north, she'd come here. Ivy had answered 30 seconds after Selena knocked on the dented metal door. Her red hair was up in a messy bun, black-rimmed glasses were perched on her pert, freckled nose, and an old sweatshirt with faded letters that read, "Plants are people," dangled off one shoulder.
What's wrong?
Selena had leaned against the grimy doorframe.
Can't a girl say hi?
At 3:15 in the morning?
But Ivy beckoned her in, glancing around the dripping dark of the old train tunnel. Selena surveyed the space again, noting the desk against one wall, full of piles of those little circus ball bombs. Some were only half-formed, left in pieces beneath a magnifying glass and light. On the desk chair, Harley's bandolier of throwing knives draped to the floor.
She's certainly got the madcap villain's lair down, Selena observed.
She views this as the ultimate form of self-expression. Ivy waved a hand toward a vine-covered table shoved against a poster of a lion tamer. The table was covered in papers, books, and plants.
That's the only self-expression I'm allowed to have here, she said, chuckling. The only place Harley isn't allowed to decorate.
The plants shimmered and writhed under the sun lamps humming above them.
Your pets?
My friends,
Ivy said, padding over to the table and smiling at the 7 potted plants.
Elizabeth, Emma, Fanny, Catherine, Anne, Marianne, and Eleanor.
Selena's brows crossed beneath her helmet.
You named them after Austin heroines?
Ivy beamed as bright as the twinkling light strung overhead.
You're my new favorite person. No one ever gets the reference. Even Harley asked me what the hell I was talking about.
Selena slid the lenses of her helmet up as she studied the 7 plants.
I'm more of a Bronte girl.
Ivy waved a hand.
Ugh, Mr. Rochester is gross. Darcy, all the way.
Selena grinned, nodding her concession.
Why are you up, anyway?
Ivy pointed to the laptop half buried among the papers and books on the table.
Working.
Where's Harley?
No sign of her in this underground circus. Ivy slid into the swivel chair in front of the table and twirled around.
Don't know. She left a few hours ago in a hurry. Hasn't come back since.
Worry darkened her eyes.
But she does that a lot. I try not to pry.
It seemed like Ivy never wanted to pry, to push Harley. Silence fell, and Ivy stared up at her, waiting. Selena blew out a breath.
I may or may not have made out with someone I shouldn't have.
Ivy grinned rather wickedly.
Oh, do tell.
Selena knew the woman was well aware of who it had been. Selena paced across the worn, star-flecked blue carpet, past the 3 large mallets leaning against the red velvet fainting couch.
It just happened. I don't know.
Was it good?
Selena sighed at the vaulted stone ceiling.
Yes. God, yes.
Ivy scanned her from head to toe.
So you came here to tell me all the steamy details?
I came here. I don't even know.
She glanced toward the metal door.
I should let you work.
She grimaced, desperate for any way out of this.
What are you working on anyway?
Refining the formula for that regenerative salve I used the other night. And don't try to change the subject.
But Selena asked,
that formula, are you going to sell it?
Ivy waved a hand.
It would require so many stupid hoops with FDA approval that there's no way I could really sell it, especially with who I am.
You could have a third party represent you, stay hidden,
and have them get all the credit? No.
So you'll make this miraculous thing and not share it?
Ivy frowned, propping her bare feet up on the table. One of the plants, Emma, reached out a green tendril and tickled her. Ivy laughed, toes curling. But the smile faded again as she said,
I started down this road. I have to face the consequences.
You can change lanes, change the direction. There are a lot of people who could really use that salve. You should find a way to share it with them.
I know,
Ivy said, lowering her feet to the blue carpet.
I think it could be particularly successful with burn victims. At least, it's worked on me.
Selena raised a brow, scanning Ivy's expanse of smooth skin. Ivy winced.
I may or may not have experimented on myself.
You burned yourself?
Ivy waved a hand.
Just a little one.
Jesus,
Selena said.
You need to get into a real lab.
Ivy stiffened.
I did have a real lab, until it was blown up.
I mean with people, other scientists to help you.
You get a real job, and I'll get one too.
Selena smiled.
Fair enough.
Ivy gave her a sly look.
You still haven't told me about your makeout. Selena glanced to the metal door behind her and started slinking toward it.
Don't you even dare leave without telling me the details, Ivy said.
She marched across the room, dodging everything from discarded fishnets to pink wigs to a cymbal-playing monkey toy. Plopping onto the red fainting couch before an old TV, she patted the worn velvet beside her.